We're also very privileged this afternoon to have as our fifth and final speaker Vubbo Akels of ESA's ESTEC Center. He is one of the first three ESA astronauts selected and currently is in charge of education projects. He also is an aerospace technology professor of the Technical University of Delft. I've asked him to share with us his views of the future direction of human space exploration, particularly as the space station moves from the drawing boards and the factory floors into low Earth orbit. Now, while that is certainly a big step, one of the things we want to do is ask, what lies beyond? Do we keep humans in the relatively safe confines of Earth orbit? Do we move on to the Moon or Mars or both? And what is the best way to approach these challenges? Vubbo Akels.
Thank you very much, Lon. And yes, I have the honor to be the last speaker of the 49th IAF Congress, which I do with pleasure. What I would like to do first is address this particular text. This text, which I just borrowed from a friend out of Moscow who is working with solar sails and large panels who illuminate, reflect the sun, says that man, the cutting edge of terrestrial life, has no rational alternative than to expand the environment and assure a base beyond the Earth. Global development, therefore, must be based on an open world concept and include both the development of extraterrestrial resources and a wiser management of our terrestrial resources. This is extraterrestrial. This imperative, its central goal is the preservation of civilization. I was using this text because it was saying very, very well what you feel as you work as an astronaut in space and circle the Earth in 1.5 hours, feeling totally disconnected from the planet because you are at a distance, you don't feel it, you're weightless. And also your dimensional shock you get is that where you on Earth believe that you have relatively large amounts of space and you have very long travels, like for instance going all the way from the Netherlands to Melbourne as I did, in space this whole travel is just 3/4 of an hour and everything shrinks to an enormous reduced size, meaning that you have no alternative, that we have to go beyond, and the question is now, how do you do that? Well, I want to show one example, because I would like to address two different ways which I see that we will see things going beyond. One is the, let's say, the commercial way led by a few, relatively few people who have the honor to, or are fortunate that they have a lot of money. There's nothing against it, and in fact, I think it's very wise to propose projects where especially those who have lots of money can also spend lots of money. That is that's a very healthy attitude for the society, I think. And one of those proposals is space tourism, by which people would pay initially something like $100,000 or perhaps even more to have a trip in space and get the same experiences which I did. I had not to pay for my flight, unfortunately. But I think this is one way where it could go. And as I teach my students at the Technical University of Delft, it is something which in the long run seems almost to be unavoidable. Why do I say that? If you take, as a physicist, the energy which you would need for a person with a little bit of luggage, let's say 100 kilograms in total, to put him into an orbit in space, and suppose you would have a machine which is 100% efficient, then you can ask yourself your question now, how much energy is that? And you will be really surprised, perhaps, to hear that that is not more than 100 liters of gasoline. So eventually, when we have the right machine, and I can tell you this is not the right machine yet, this is a start, this is going to be still very expensive, but you never know how we evolve. If we have the right machine, a ticket to space would not be more than about $300. So unavoidable that this route will lead to some development which we have not heard of and goes beyond. But I think that next to the route of the rich and the route of the commerce, there's another route which I personally would like to bring to your attention very, very strongly, because I personally believe that that route is going to be even more, fruitful in the future and will give us even more surprises. And that is the root of the next generation, the root of the youngsters. We can make beautiful plans, and all those plans which we make are based on our thinking. And anybody who has children or anybody who has taught and educated students always realize again and again and again there is a difference in generations. And the generations which have to make the future are not us, but it's the next generations. And one example is, which I want to highlight here, is a satellite which is developing presently on a contract of my office. It's called Lunarsat. And that satellite is going to be the agency's, European Space Agency's, first educational satellite. Going to the moon, being launched in the end of 2000. It's not fully approved yet. We don't have full funding yet, but we are working hard on it. It will fly with a very intriguing orbit to the moon, being there mid-2001. And what is the objective? Next to being educational, the real objective is vision. Because young people, they really love vision. Vision, like the first extraterrestrial outpost, is going to be on the south pole of the moon. Why? The moon is the closest, only 4 days' travel. Why? The south pole of the moon has an intriguing situation that there's probably ice in very cold craters. Why? On the south pole of the moon, as well as on the north pole, you will find perhaps an elevated area which is permanently in sunlight, giving it a very favorable place for such an outpost. So this satellite is going there. The satellite has a propulsion system. It's a real satellite, and it's unbelievable cheap. This whole satellite is going to cost $15 million, including launch and including the mission. And it really has a payload, which is also very, very interesting. So it is something where the youngsters are showing that you can do a lot if you have the energy of very many young people who are willing to work very hard for very, very low salaries. As I said, I believe that next to the, commercial and rich approach, which I definitely applaud, I think it's very necessary to do that. And out of my personal experience, it is a lot of fun and it's absolutely beautiful to have a space experience. I also believe very, very much in to address the youngsters and give the youngsters really a lot of stimulus and opportunity to go their way, because the future is theirs. And therefore, I would like to conclude and join with the first speaker. I want to say that in the what is called the Long-Term Space Policy Committee of the European Space Agency, there is a paper in preparation for the next Ministerial Council. And I've recently been there in a discussion on how this paper should look like, and in particular, what the role of the youngsters should be in the future and how the European Space Agency can address those. And we have been discussing something which is very similar, as the first speaker said, namely a tax. Shouldn't it be time to just get a tax on all the programs which are running? And we're suggesting something like perhaps a 1% youth tax. So for the projects which we do, let's say in a mandatory program, why not having a certain percentage? And you can argue, if somebody says it's 0.5%, okay, well then take 0.5% or 1%. But the real key issue is, how much is it worth to us to allow the youngsters to do these kind of satellites and to start working on their future? Thank you very much.